Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is our year in music.
I like stunning, I like shining, I like $1 million deals. Where's my pen? Bitch, I'm signing.
For that, I say thank you. Next, next, thank you. Next, next, thank you. Next, I'm so grateful for my ex. Thank you. Next, next, thank you. Yeah. Baby, don't make me spell it out for ya. All of the feelings that I got for you can be explained, but I can try for you.
So those are just some of the biggest songs of 2018. We heard I Like It by Cardi B, Thank You Next by Ariana Grande, and Boston Globe Associate Editor and columnist Renee Graham's fave of the year, Make Me Feel by Janelle Monáe. And Renee Graham is here in the studio today to break down what she loves about that and some of her other favorites. Hello, Renee. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Well, thanks. Thanks for coming to Radio Boston. Hey, listeners, we also want to hear from you. What's your favorite album of 2018, your favorite musical moment of the year? Don't hesitate. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or you can tweet at us at Radio Boston. Renee, let's start with your favorite album of the year, which we heard at the top there. It's Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer. This is the third album of a decade-long, a 10-year-long career, and it came out back in the spring. What did you love about her album?
I loved everything about this album. It had been a bit of a gap between albums for her, and she admitted part of the problem was she had lost her mentor, Prince. And even before they kind of hooked up and became friends, you kind of heard his influence in her music. And so she really had to rethink it. But it also, I think, liberated her and freed her. And I think what I really loved about Dirty Computer was it's audacious in its sexual expression.
Mm-hmm.
It's about freedom. It's about independence. It's about embracing your difference and your otherness.
So actually, let's hear a little bit more from this song, Make Me Feel, which is off her Dirty Computer album.
So please don't stop it. It's like I'm powerful with a little bit of tender and emotion, no sexual bender. Mess me up, yeah, but no one does it better. There's nothing better. That's just the way you make me feel.
I kind of feel like we should just play the whole song.
It's just a wonderful song. I mean, it's about the joy of sex.
Yeah.
Period.
There you go.
Can't beat it.
You know, NPR described the album as a, quote, funk pop soundscape. And they described the album as creating a world where, and I'm going to quote this because it's pretty amazing, nonconformity can spell extinction if you don't fight back. And with every guitar riff, every interlude, every moment of loving queer affection, Monáe fights. That's the end of the quote. Tell us a little more about her.
You know, she is an artist who, you know, sort of coming up in the moment, has always created her own sort of time and her way. She's not following really any of the trends that were out there. You know, she sort of played with gender. She played with ideas of sexuality from the beginning of her career, which could have been a death knell for her in a lot of ways because, you know, people weren't necessarily ready to go on that journey with her.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of Janelle Monáe, I think of the comment that Lena Waithe, the actress and writer, made when she won the Emmy a few years ago, where she said, "The things that make us different, those are our superpowers." In some ways, that's what this album is about. This is about Janelle Monáe completely embracing her superpowers and encouraging the rest of us to do the same.
You know, this was a year in a lot of ways, and I've said this a couple times on the show today already, about superwomen. You had Janelle Monáe. It was a big year for Ariana Grande, for country singer Kacey Musgraves. I want to pivot now to another one of your picks because it is about women, and it focused on women in classical music. The album was called For Women, Music for Solo Piano, and it's by Samantha Agay. Tell me a little bit about this choice from you. Who exactly is she and what is this music?
She's a British pianist and she's a classical musician. And what she found is when she was studying, you know, she studied the masters, of course, but she wasn't hearing about any women. And then as she got more and more into the music, she started to hear about women like Florence Price, like Margaret Bonds. And she wondered, like, why don't I know who these women composers are? And, you know, that's what she's doing. She takes music by four women composers who are very little known: Florence Price, Vitislav Kaprilova, Ethel Bilslin and Margaret Bonds. And what she does is she brings their music to people. You know, the remarkable thing is people always think of classical music as essentially being, you know, white guys.
Right.
And there were lots of women always. You can go back to the 19th century with Fanny Mendelssohn and Clara Schumann. They were making music, but people weren't putting it out there, and it wasn't being performed because they were women. And that's always happened. So what Samantha Ege is trying to do is change that.
So that's so striking. Let's listen to one of those songs. This is the third movement of Florence Price's Sonata in E Minor. It's performed by Samantha Ege herself.
Yes.
All right, that album is Four Women Music for Solo Piano, and it's just absolutely beautiful. We're going to go on to some other subjects, but before we do, I want to take a caller, and I'm going to listen here to Pat from Watertown. Pat, welcome to Radio Boston. Pat, do we have you on the line?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can, Pat. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So tell us, Pat, you want to talk about jazz?
Well, I just wanted to mention one of the sort of stories of the year for me is the closing of Ryle's Jazz Club in Cambridge, which was the last of the local independent venues for jazz. And it's not just jazz, it's punk, it's a lot of the other sort of subgenres that have lost their homes in Boston. And it's not clear to me, you know, what's going to happen with those sort of smaller genres for live music.
Pat, thanks so much for that call. And Renee, you know, we heard that word small. We heard the word independent. It does feel like we're losing some of our ability to have good access to edgy, independent, smaller produced music. What's your reaction to Pat's call and to that kind of trend?
You know, the lifeblood of music is live performance. And when you run out of venues where people can go to see performers, that's how you get bonded to performers. You see them live. You see what they do. When you're losing those venues, you start to wonder what's going to happen. And, you know, not to mention, that's how a lot of musicians make their money, touring. You know, they're not making it from records anymore. And so touring is very important, and you have to have those venues. So when you lose places like Ryle's, which was, you know, legendary in the Boston area, you know, it's really a hardship.
Let's take one more call, because we've got another caller here. This is Alex from Melrose. Alex, you're on the air with Radio Boston.
Hi, how are you guys?
Well, Alex, how are you?
Good, good. So I wanted to talk about Astroworld and kind of the rap music scene this year with Travis Scott and Kanye West and Drake and those other rappers. I kind of felt like Astroworld kind of shaped the college music scene this year and kind of, you know, changed the way college students listen to music. And I wanted to know how you guys felt about, like, the rap scene becoming more prevalent in modern music and more popular music today.
Great. Alex, thanks for calling in. And let me just direct that question a little more specifically, Renee, because we had a real loss in that community this year, which was the death of Mac Miller. He was a rapper from Pittsburgh, and he was this early internet success story, and he released his fifth album in the spring. And then in September, he died at his home in California from an overdose at just 26. He was one of the leading lights in rap music. And how are you thinking about his death? What does that mean to us? And where are these cultural influences that are changing how, as Alex said, people are listening to music today?
You know, the loss of Mac Miller is, I think people are still measuring how deep this is going to go. He was not just extremely talented, but it was the way he was changing. You were watching him evolve from this sort of frat boy rap he was doing early on to where he got very, you know, experimental and much more introspective. And that's why his album this year, his last album, Swimming, I thought was so important and so good, because he was really talking about things that were going on in his life and not with a lot of distance. He'd had this 2-year relationship with Ariana Grande, which broke up, you know, primarily because of his issues with substance abuse.
Yeah.
And he talked very openly about that. He wasn't critical of her at all, but it was just someone who was trying to figure out a way to get healthy and live a better life. And the fact that he didn't succeed, the fact that he's not still with us, sort of speaks to how much he understood what was going on in his life.
You know, his album Swimming came out in the spring, and as we mourn his loss with that struggle with addiction, let's take a minute to hear from this single, Self-Care.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Renee, you talked about how open Mac Miller was about his struggles with addiction and his life. You can hear it in his music. He was really real and raw. He laid it all out on the table. Is that atypical for the genre? Was he special in that space?
No, he wasn't. I mean, you look at people like Chance the Rapper and Frank Ocean. No, I mean, there were a lot of people who were doing that kind of thing, but he did it in his own way. With his issues. He didn't speak of these things generically,
mm-hmm.
He spoke of them very specifically. And that was important because he was having these struggles. A few months before he died, he was arrested for a hit and run. And he talked about that. He didn't try to sugarcoat it. He didn't try to make humor out of it. He understood, I have everything right now and I could lose it. And there's a line, like the last song on his last album, he has this line where he says, "You could have the world in the palm of your hand and you still might drop it."
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, when I listened to Mac Miller, it was almost like reading someone's diary. It almost felt uncomfortable to listen to him because it was so raw. But that's what made, I think, his music so vital for a lot of people.
Now, I want to stay on the theme of loss for a minute, but also a celebration of a life. Because in a year where women were strong, we lost one of the greats, Aretha Franklin. She died in August at the age of 76 at pancreatic cancer. Her music, her voice, her impact on pop culture, it's really incomparable. And I want to just take a minute to run down some of her accomplishments, because she had 18 Grammys. She was the first woman to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1987. And she was the youngest recipient of a Kennedy Center's honors in 1994. So I think we really should hear from her. This is her performance at the Kennedy Center in 2015 with her rendition of "You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman." Now, not many people in any business are relevant for 50 years, let alone an artist with that kind of staying power. Why was she so special?
Because she was the queen of soul. Because she was unchallenged. Because, there was never this idea that somehow, Aretha changed her music for the masses. No. She did what she did and the masses came to her. Church never left her music. And that connection was so deep for her. I think it connected to fans as well. The depth of her soul, the depth of the passion in the way she sang, I think is, that's what sustains a career for 50 years. And she was also just, for someone people didn't really seem to know particularly well, Aretha was, she was a cultural icon, the outfits, the coats, the politics, the way her songs became anthems for women and for people of color. There aren't many artists who can do that and can do it for that many decades and stay relevant. The clip you played from the Kennedy Center Honors, that's 2015. She's already in her 70s at that point, and she brought the house down.
Including the woman who wrote the song,
Carole King,
right?
Who looked like she was hearing the song for the first time. What Aretha Franklin can do, and that's why her passing was really, certain deaths stop time. That was one of them.
Yeah. We've got just a couple minutes left, and I want to go through a few other big music moments of the past year, and I want to start with Childish Gambino, also known as Donald Glover. He is Renaissance man. He's a movie star, he's a singer, he's a rapper, he's an actor. He created the FX television show Atlanta, which has been a huge hit. He didn't have an album out this year, but right as the second season of Atlanta wrapped up, he put out this new song called This Is America. Let's listen to it for just a sec. Now, it wasn't just the song here that was huge this year. He had a music video. It rocked my world when I saw it for the first time, and it garnered nearly 40 million views in just the first 3 days. It had lots of allusions to American history and pop culture, and it also replicated some famous instances of anti-black violence and Jim Crow imagery. Some loved it, some hate it. Where do you fall on this one?
I loved it.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I was almost shocked by it. I kept watching it and over again because it's one of those things that you see something different every time you watch, because visually there's so much coming at you. And it's right. It was anti-black violence. It was police violence. It was Jim Crow. It was minstrel shows. The poses he was. I mean, it made people really stop and think. People analyzed that video like it was the Bible. Everybody had a take on what it meant and what he was saying. And, you know, that's what great art's supposed to do. It's supposed to provoke. It's supposed to put you in a different place and make you see the world a little differently. And I think that's exactly what Donald Glover did with This Is America.
You know, you referred to it as great art. And one more quick question on that. Was it necessary for it to be the song and the video, for it to be all of the art, all of the story, all of the message that he was trying to produce?
You know, I think you can do, it was sort of a multimedia presentation. You know, I think the video was very important. I don't know that you get it in the same way just by listening to the song.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, you know, as a political statement, you know, in such a strange year, it was perfect.
All right. In a sentence, what's the one thing you're looking forward to about music in 2019, Renee?
You know, I have to admit, I'm ready for some good rock music.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I feel like rock music has completely fallen off. You know, there's been great hip hop, there's been great R&B, but, you know, not a lot to be said for rock music. When you think about the great moments of music this past year, it's Drake, it's that kind of thing. It's not a rock band. So let's see what rock can do in 19.
So we're going to end on what the producers here would say is some not good rock music by Weezer. This is Renee Graham, columnist from the Boston Globe. Renee, thanks so much for being with us here today on Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Hey, that's our show for today. Thanks for joining Radio Boston. It's a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.